from the last talk. The angel of the Lord called unto Abraham a second time out of heaven and said, By myself have I sworn, saith the Lord, because thou hast done this thing, and hast not withheld thy son, thine only son, that in blessing I will bless thee, and when multiplying I will multiply thy seed as the stars of the heavens, and as the sand which is upon the seashore. And thy seed shall possess the gate of his enemies. And in thy seed shall all the nations of the earth be blessed. We'll recall that the first Passover led to the deliverance of those who were under the blood. That's the strong foregleam of the reality fulfilled in Jesus Christ. It is the sacrifice of Jesus Christ which will lead to the deliverance of the church from this world, from sin and death, into the heavenly resurrection, and of the whole world of mankind into the earthly resurrection in the kingdom to follow. Christ, our Passover, will deliver all who are under his blood, all the families of the earth. Now we're going to look at about three little side topics this morning. Some of them have little annoying problems or questions associated with them. Let's see, is it this one here? Okay, is this any better? Okay, beyond that, I think the amplifier volume will have to handle it. But good. My first question is, when was the Passover lamb slain? The usual question is not whether it's on the 14th or the 13th or the 15th, although that may be a question too. But when was the Passover lamb slain as respects the time of day? We read in Exodus 12:6, Your lamb shall be without blemish, a male of the first year. Ye shall take it from the sheep or from the goats, and ye shall keep it up until the 14th day of the same month. And the whole assembly of the congregation of Israel shall kill it between the two evenings. That's the literal. We see that in the margins of some Bibles, and we see it in the text of some of the other translations. Ye shall kill it between the two evenings. The question simply is, what is meant by the expression between the two evenings? It's an expression that's used more than once in the Scriptures. I think it's used something like 9 or 11 times in the Hebrew Old Testament. But we do have one place among the usages that helps to locate it. And we look in Exodus, the 16th chapter, verses 12 and 13. And there we get a pretty strong clue. I might mention that the three views of which I am aware as to the meaning of between the two evenings is one, from noon until from noon until say 6 p.m. or sunset. There are considered or reckoned two evenings by the Pharisees, and they go from noon until essentially 3 p.m. The sun is halfway down, and the other one 3 p.m. to 6 p.m. That's one view. A second view is it's between the time that the sun sets and the time that the stars come out. And the third view is from one sunset all the way around the clock until the next sunset. If there's a fourth and a fifth view, I'd be interested in knowing what they are. But three should be good enough for now. We look now at Exodus, the 16th chapter, verses 12 and 13. And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, I have heard the murmurings of the children of Israel. Speak unto them, saying, Between the two evenings ye shall eat flesh, and in the morning ye shall be filled with bread, and ye shall know that I am the Lord your God. And it came to pass at even that the quails came up and covered the camp, and in the morning the dew lay round about the camp. That's verses 11 through 13, American Standard Version. There are two things that we can get out of this usage of between the two evenings. One is that between the two evenings, whatever time is meant by it, it's contrasted with morning. Between the two evenings at one time of day, morning in the other time of day, that would seem to rule out the thought that between the two evenings means from one sunset all the way around 24 hours to the next sunset. Whatever period it is, it's the opposite time of day from dawn and morning. But then there's something else, too. The quail came up when? In the morning? At evening. Why would the quail come up at evening? That's right, they got to sleep at night the same as we do, or at least as we ought to. I'm sure sometimes that doesn't fit us at conventions too well, but nevertheless, the quail fly during the day, and they come down to rest for the evening and sleep for the night. So, at even is when the quails come up. So when do they eat the quail? Between the two evenings. So it would seem from the scriptural usage of the expression between the two evenings, it starts at even. And in that respect, the expression between the two evenings would seem to fit the expression that the Sadducees, I don't normally feel in good company with them, but nevertheless, the expression that the Sadducees used, that between the two evenings meant the time between sunset and when the stars come out. In English, we really have a rather similar expression in one word. We just don't tend to think of it that way. But our word twilight is the Anglo-Saxon two lights. We have the sun going down and the stars coming out. And it has the same thought, then, as between the two evenings. Okay. Now, of course, if someone doesn't agree, let it be his own conscience. It is not up to my conscience to rule his. I ought never to trample on another person's conscience. But it would seem to me, then, from the Exodus 16, verses 12 and 13, that we do have the contrast between the two evenings and in the morning, and the quail come up at even, they eat them between the two evenings, would suggest then a period, short period, after sunset, perhaps an hour or two. Let's go on to question number two. How is it that the Israelites were, A, to slay the Passover lamb right after sunset on the 14th of Nisan, 14th of the month. B, they were to eat it with their shoes on, the staff in hand, in haste, right ready to go. And C, Numbers 33:3 tells us that they left Egypt on Nisan 15. That seems to be a problem. And there are three different ways that, brethren, resolve it. One is to say, well, it was really slain on the 13th. towards the end of the 13th, before sunset. And then the 14th began at sunset, all right. And then we go around, and in the morning, well, they're really not ready to leave. They've got to get all their things together, and so they delay another day. Another way is to say, well, the 15th really begins at sunset. The 14th, rather. It's slain on the 14th, and after sunset begins the 15th. And if that's the case, then they have to slay it at a time other than between the two evenings, it would seem. So that view has a bit of a problem. And there is a third resolution for the problem, and that is to say, what if the day was not reckoned as beginning at sunset? You immediately say, that's a far out view. But in the scriptures, we have different reckonings of the time of day. When does the day begin? There's a reckoning that it begins at sunset. There's another reckoning of the day that begins at midnight. There's another reckoning of the day that begins at sunrise. Look at Matthew 28:1, where you'd never expect to find it. And there is inferentially, in Genesis, the first chapter, the suggestion of a day considered beginning at noon, at least symbolically. In the ancient nations, all four of these reckonings were used by different nations, and sometimes by the same nation at different times, the reckoning was changed. Pliny says there's also a fifth way of reckoning, which is by the common people everywhere from sunrise to sunset, and they could care less about what happens during the dark. They're sleeping. In the reckoning that we see in the scriptures, there is reference to the sunset in reckoning in Mark, first chapter, verses 21 and 32. There might also be a reference to it in John 20, verse 1. That one we won't take time to read. That's Mark, first chapter. We read first the 21st verse. They go into Capernaum, and straightway on the Sabbath day he entered into the synagogue and taught. That's for background of the 31st verse. And he came and took her by the hand and raised her up. And the fever left her, and she ministered unto them. And at even, when the sun did set, they brought unto him all that were sick and to them that were possessed with demons. The implication being that they had to wait until sunset to bring them, because what happened previously was on the Sabbath. And so they waited until the Sabbath was done, and that would be at sunset. So this seems to be a suggestion of a sunset day. We have one at midnight in John 1:39. And that would be the Roman reckoning. He saith unto them, come, and ye shall see. They came therefore and saw where he abode, and they abode with him that day. It was about the 10th hour. That would seem to suggest the thought of a midnight reckoning. Because after all, the 10th hour, they abode with him that day. It was the 10th hour. Well, if it were the 10th hour reckoned as beginning at dawn, then it would have been about 4 p.m., and they wouldn't have been with him that day. It would seem that it would have to be 10 a.m. Then we have another reckoning, a sunrise reckoning, perhaps suggested in Genesis 19:34. But let's look at Mark 11:11 and 12. Well, we just got through looking at Mark. He was giving us a sunset reckoning of the day. And we look in Mark 11, begin with the 11th verse. He entered into Jerusalem and into the temple. And when he had looked around upon all things, it being now eventide, he went out unto Bethany with the 12. And on the morrow, when they were come out from Bethany, he hungered. It was on the morrow, then. That sounds more like a sunrise reckoning. We could look at some others. Luke 23:56, Acts 4:3. The really telling one, though, seems to be in Matthew, the 28th chapter, in the first verse. Now, this was after the crucifixion, when it says, "Now, late on the Sabbath day, as it began to dawn, towards the first day of the week." How can we understand this? By a sunset reckoning or by a midnight reckoning? It's late on the Sabbath day, just before dawn. I think the only way we can resolve this one is to say this is a sunrise reckoning of the day. There seem to be references to that also in the Old Testament. One of the sources that I read suggests that when the day is reckoned in the New Testament, this is the most common reckoning, a sunrise beginning of the day. I'm not sure that is true, but it is possible. This particular reference is interesting because now we're talking about the one who fulfills the Passover type. This is in regard to the Passover itself. What if they did so in Egypt? The Babylonians, in the later times, reckoned the beginning of the day at sunset. But the Egyptians, around the time of the Exodus, and for centuries before and after, appear to have done their reckoning at sunrise. The beginning of their month was not when the new moon was first visible after sunset, but rather when the old moon was first no longer visible at sunrise. What would be the consequence if we take a look at the day beginning at sunrise and assume that at the time of the Exodus, the Israelites were using the Egyptian reckoning? I need a black one here to play the night. Suppose you use a sunrise reckoning here, and let this be the day. It goes from sunrise to sunrise. Well, it really makes one question a little bit irrelevant. And that is, did they play the Passover just before or just after sunset? Well, it really wouldn't matter a whole lot because they'd both be on the 14th with the sunrise reckoning. Now, we do know in later times that the reckoning was changed so that the reckoning was then at sunset, from sunset to sunset. And there's an advantage to that, too. Because of that change, Jesus could both partake of the memorial with the disciples on the 14th of Nisan and be the actual Passover lamb in the afternoon following, still on the 14th of Nisan, the same day. It would seem then that the resolution of the other problem of their leaving on the 15th is also resolved in this fashion. And that is, they slew the Passover on the 14th, between the two evenings. They partook of the Passover at the same time that evening, between then and midnight. That would still be on the 14th in Egypt. And then as soon as we get to sunrise, we're automatically on the 15th. They weren't to leave their houses until morning. But as soon as they get to morning, it's already the 15th of Nisan. And so it would seem all of the scriptures are resolved by considering the Egyptian sunrise reckoning at the time of the Exodus, and that later they shifted to the sunset reckoning. There are references to that also later on. One of those is Leviticus 23, verses 27 and 32. I don't think we'll take time for them now. But now we come to one that's frequently asked. How is the Passover date reckoned? And because of that, we're also asking, how is the memorial date reckoned? Because it doesn't seem to follow a logical pattern in our calendar, that is, the Roman calendar. Now, all ancient calendars were reckoned from observables. Today, our calendars, to the extent that they are reckoned according to the moon, are reckoned according to the conjunctions. Now, what's the difference? Well, the sun is up in the sky, and the moon is going around every 29 and a half days this way. And so when the moon passes the sun, right at that moment, that is conjunction. But you can't see the moon when it passes the sun, because the sun is so bright that it just bleaches it out. It takes generally about 18 to 21 hours after conjunction before the new moon is first visible. It takes a little longer in Los Angeles. You know, your air here is much too clear. We like to see what we're breathing. But all ancient calendars were reckoned according to the visibility or a lack of visibility of the new moon. The first visibility of the new moon was 18 to 21 hours typically after conjunction. And why a range? Well, that's because sometimes the moon was a little farther from the sun, sometimes a little nearer, as we still have today. And let's see. To reach the full moon takes about 12.9 days to 14 days after the conjunction. So the full moon generally ranges from the very end of Nisan 13 to just the very beginning of Nisan 15, or almost always on Nisan 14. Now the question is raised, is Nisan 1 reckoned according to the new moon nearest the spring equinox or next after the spring equinox? You know, if you look in places like the reprints, you choose this year and it says the new moon next after the spring equinox, and you look over here and it says the new moon nearest the spring equinox. So both are suggested. Both were pretty much in keeping with the Jewish calendar. From 1880 onward, which is the first time that we have mention of the reckoning of the Lord's Supper, from 1880 onward, it never deviates by more than 2 days from the Jewish calendar, and it does that on only 6 occasions. Twice they were reckoning according to the new moon conjunction, I think. Twice they were reckoning according to the full moon, and twice they thought they were following the Jewish calendar, but maybe missed it a day. Now, in Jesus' time, which way did they do it? The new moon nearest the spring equinox, or the new moon next after? And the answer was, Yes, maybe. And there was a reason for it. The decision was made by the Sanhedrin. And you might choose the new moon closest to the spring equinox. Or, actually, you're really considering when the calendar ends. You're coming to the end of the 12th month of the previous year. Well, if that's too far before the spring equinox, then you'll add a 13th month to the calendar that year. That was one of the criteria. Another one was, are the spring lambs yet tender? Another one is, were the crops ripening too slowly? And your first reaction is, who cares? What matters that? And the answer is the Passover. If the spring lamb was yet too tender, not enough meat on it, then what is it that you're going to sacrifice for the Passover? Well, okay, there's pretty good reason then. Give them an extra month to fatten up a bit. Now, after the Passover, you have the seven-day feast of the Passover. And then you have the Feast of Weeks, or the offering of the first fruits on that first Sunday after. And then you count another 49 days to get to the 50th day, which is why it's called Pentecost, and you have another offering of the first fruits. Well, now, if the crops are ripening too slowly, do you have any good first fruits to offer to the Lord? So the Jewish calendar at the time of our Lord was reckoned according to how things were ripening, how the crops were doing. There was not a fixed calendar at that time. The time came when the Jewish calendar was made a fixed calendar. That was when they were in dispersion, and they began to realize, well, our Jewish brethren in the East had to do it at the time they thought best. But the Jewish brethren in the West, they also had to do their own reckoning. But, you know, the world is getting smaller. People are sailing around the globe, and you may be doing it on the wrong day. I'll mention I personally had an occasion to figure out what I would do. I was to be in New Zealand, in Auckland, on the day of the memorial, leaving 1 minute before midnight, and was to fly to Los Angeles, crossing the international date line, arriving in Los Angeles at 6 p.m. before the brethren celebrated the memorial there. As it turned out, I was able to go back to Australia for another week and I had the memorial in Melbourne. But it's an interesting question. What do you do if you were in that position? You must take memorial, certainly in Auckland, because you can't depend on airplane schedules. But what do you do when you get back to Los Angeles? Do you stay away when the brethren are celebrating memorial? Do you go there and partake twice? Or do you go there and simply have it explained why you're not partaking again? Well, the thinking process was good. Fortunately, it was resolved without a problem. But the reckoning of the Passover, then, was fixed by the Jewish calendar. When the Jewish calendar was fixed, around 400 A.D., Rabbi Hillel gave a calendar by which you figure every 29.53 days there's a new month starting. And that calendar is continued to be used for now. The way he fixed it, it was the new moon nearest the spring equinox at that time. But that calendar creeps just a little bit. By the time we get to the 20th century, it's the new moon nearest about 6 days following the spring equinox. And by that we can understand why, say, in the reprints, it says sometimes the new moon nearest and sometimes the new moon next after. It is the closest thing that we have to a Sanhedrin today as to how we reckon the Jewish calendar. Now, you look in the World Almanac for the Passover date, You find that it may be April 22nd this year. Well, and then you notice carefully that that's really missing the 15th, because they don't celebrate the 14th anymore. So, okay, back up here, April 21st. But now the day begins, according to current Jewish reckoning, at sunset. So we really have to go April 21st minus. That's back towards what to us is the end of April the 20th. So look in the almanac for the Passover date, according to the Jewish calendar, which will be Nisan 15, and then subtract 2 days, and we get the memorial date that we have been observing for almost 120 years. In fact, this year it will be 120 years that we know of. There are groups that reckon it differently. Paul Johnson reckoned it according to the conjunction of the new moon at Jerusalem, nearest the spring equinox. They're a month different than we this year. The watchtower reckons it according to the new moon as reckoned in Brooklyn. It would seem for most of us that the use of the Jewish calendar, which is a published calendar, is most convenient. By the Jewish calendar, these are the dates for the reckoning of the memorial dates, not only for last year, but this year and about 12 years following. And as one scans up and down, he generally finds that these dates are between about March 23rd and April 23rd. Marge's birthday is about the last memorial date that one will get on the calendar. Another interesting thing that you notice: Tuesday, Sunday, Thursday, Tuesday, Tuesday, Friday, Tuesday, Sunday, Friday. We have never celebrated a memorial on a Monday. We don't celebrate memorial on a Wednesday or on a Saturday. Why not? Well, there's a reason for it. As usually, there are reasons for things, even though you and I don't see it, at least at first. In the reckoning of the Jewish calendar, they don't want to have a high holy day Sabbath immediately next to a regular weekly Sabbath. That is, you don't want it on a Friday or a Sunday, because then you've got 2 days in a row when you can't do any work, you can't do any preparing of food. It's okay if it falls on a weekly Sabbath, but not the day before or the day after. And then there is a Jewish ritual that requires work be done on that day, and so they don't want that to fall on a weekly Sabbath. And as a result, Monday, Wednesday, and Saturday are excluded from the Jewish calendar. I've got just about enough time to hint as to how you can figure it. Take the Day of Atonement. That is one of the high holy days of the Jewish calendar. You don't want the 10th day of the month to fall on Friday or on Sunday. So you work your way back through the Jewish calendar and you say, well, I'm not prepared to do this right on the spur of the moment, but you can see why working back through the Jewish calendar 6 months would right there exclude 2 days from the Jewish calendar for our memorial. Offhand, I think that it may be it excludes Monday, I think. It may be Monday and Wednesday are excluded that way. Well, so much for that now. We might look now at the crucifixion of our Lord as our Passover. He was crucified, and most of the scholars now have come to agree with us once again that he was crucified in the year A.D. 33 on April the 3rd. An interesting thing was pointed out back, I think, in the 1920s by a fellow named Fotheringham, that on that date there was a partial eclipse of the moon. According to the present best calculations, which appear to be good enough now, the moon at moonrise in Jerusalem was about 60% eclipsed. It would have been visible from Hawaii in the setting sky, moon setting sky, all the way through New Zealand and the Orient to Babylon, even into Egypt, as far west as Alexandria. But it would have been concealed from Rome, because as the moon was rising, it was coming out of eclipse. The actual time of day, Greenwich Mean Time, would be 15:02, or 3 o'clock in the afternoon. So they would not have seen it. It would have come out of eclipse too soon. Jesus instituted the memorial in the evening when the Passover meal had been eaten in Egypt. And he died about 2:30 in the afternoon. And that would be just about the time that the moon was starting to go into eclipse. It was shortly after that that the moon started into eclipse below the horizon in Jerusalem. But when it rose in Jerusalem, it was partially eclipsed and then coming out of the eclipse. The law is commonly represented by the moon. It is the reflection of the sun. Just as the law gives us a reflection of the gospel. And Jesus, in fulfilling the law, give and then some, giving his life for you, me, and everyone. He died once for all. He began the eclipse of the moon, the eclipse of the law. There is testimony to Jesus as our Passover over lamb in other ways as well. Not only in the eclipsing of the moon, but we'll refer now to the Semitic zodiac, not to the Babylonian zodiac. At the birth of Jesus, the zodiac constellation, the one that was glorified or illuminated by the sun, bleached out, if you prefer, was Virgo, the Virgin. The constellation overhead at Jerusalem at that time, the first of the subsigns of Virgo. Today they call it Comae Berenices, but in those days it was Chema, the desired one, the desired son. Now, how did the change come to be? Well, it came about in the Grecian times when Ptolemy was, well, that is one of the Ptolemies, was the king in Egypt. He made a rash bet. He bet his wife's hair, Queen Berenice, which might have been all right, except that he lost. There was considerable consternation in the royal palace, to say the least. And finally, the royal astronomer came up with a solution. There was the constellation Chema. The meaning in Hebrew was the desired one. But Comae in Greek means hair. And that's how you get the word comb. So he said to Queen Berenice, "Your hair has been seen and appreciated by the gods, and they have taken it to heaven to be seen by all. The constellation is Comae Berenices." Yes. But Jesus was witnessed to at his birth. He was born under the sign of Virgo, with the constellation overhead of the desired sun. At his baptism, that would have been shortly after the Feast of Tabernacles and the fall of the year, the zodiac constellation was Libra, the balances of justice. He was to satisfy the balances of justice. After 40 days, it had shifted to Scorpio, the scorpion. Who was it that tempted Jesus in the wilderness? And then it goes to another constellation, Sagittarius, the archer, whose arrow is aimed at Scorpio. Now, at his baptism, the constellation overhead in the Semitic is called Boatis, the coming one, a term applied to Jesus in the scriptures, Hoerphomenos, the coming one. And in the 40 days, overhead, traversed the constellations between Ophiuchus, the serpent wrestler, and the northern crown. The head of the serpent was on the south, and the northern crown was on the north as it traversed between the two. Which way would our Lord go in the temptation? And at the end of the 40 days, it was in the constellation of Hercules, the mighty one. One translation for John 1:1. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and mighty was the Word. We come to A.D. 33. The time of his crucifixion. In that last week, the constellation, the zodiac constellation, the one enlightened by the sun, was Aries the Ram. At the time of his ascension at Pentecost, the constellation was Taurus the Bull. Indeed, the bullock, the sacrifice for us. In those last days, the constellation overhead was Andromeda, the chained woman, the covenant in chains. At his crucifixion and resurrection, it was Perseus, the breaker, one who breaks the bonds of death, being raised by his Father. At his ascension and at Pentecost, it was Auriga, the shepherd. He is our shepherd throughout the entire gospel age. Even the stars bear witness that our Lord Jesus Christ was the Passover lamb. He has satisfied justice. He will be the deliverer, not only for ourselves, but for all mankind. Now, some may ask, can Jesus really be the Messiah? He was rejected by his people, condemned. Do we not therefore look for another Messiah? And the problem that Jewish theology has is that for centuries they have been looking to the Messiah to bring Israel back to the land. Today, Israel is back in the land. Where is Messiah? How is it that Jesus began his ministry in A.D. 69? 40 years later was the last time they freely partook of the Passover. Jesus was crucified in A.D. 33. 40 years later, the last fortress fell at Masada. If Jesus were not the Messiah, why did the Lord let it happen 40 years? In all history, who else but Jesus Christ has ever attempted to fulfill all of the messianic prophecies? So who else is bringing Israel back to the land today? So the chief of our lessons really is, this do in remembrance of me, the words of our Lord.